All righty. So I just want to say hello to Nikki Williams, who is the author of It's Not You, It Is Your Hormones, which is an amazing book, highly recommended book, actually. I keep this beside my bed and I kind of just keep dipping into it. It's really interesting. I thought I might just read this this intro from Dr. Joanna Martin, founder of One of Many, who says, in my line of work, I meet a lot of women suffering from tired all the time and other specific hormone issues. This book is a must-have for every woman over 40. Hormone health is integral to every aspect of a woman's life, from increasing your confidence to having the energy to achieve what you want in life. Nikki's mission is to fully empower women with the knowledge and tools they need so that they don't have to suffer in silence and can reach their full potential. And that just resonates so much. It really does. And so welcome, Nikki. Hello.
Thank you so much, Linda. Lovely to be here. Hi, everyone. Everyone watching on the recording.
Yes, exactly. Listen, Nikki, could you just tell us a little bit about why you ended up specializing in the sort of peri to postmenopausal era of a woman's life?
Yeah, so I was working in corporate. I was working for Virgin Atlantic down in Crawley. I was managing a big team, and it was sort of the pinnacle of my corporate career, really. It was a responsible job. I had a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. I was commuting every day, and I had two young kids, and I sort of was coping, but not really very well at all. And by the time I got to about 42, I was exhausted, and just the juggle of the kids and the commute and the work. And I was just exhausted every day, and very, very, very snappy and moody. Had no energy. I had brain fog. Couldn't think straight. I had weight around my middle that I'd always been able to shift before. And I just was pretty miserable. I couldn't work out. You know, every day was a bit of a struggle, and that wasn't, you know, I wasn't getting any joy, and my kids were young, and I was like, oh, really? And it got to the point where I really snapped at my daughter when she showed me a picture she'd done at school, and I was just so tired that I just snapped at her really badly, and she just started crying and said, why are you always so crazy, Mum? And I just thought, oh my God, that was just a stab in the back. I felt so bad that I thought, I've got to do something about this. This isn't how I want to run my life. So I went to the doctor, reeled off all my symptoms. He gave me a prescription and it said Prozac on it, which was back in the day was the antidepressant of the day. And I said, well, this is an antidepressant. I don't think I'm depressed. And he goes, well, it'll make you feel better. And then sort of ushered me out of his surgery. I knew that it wasn't depression and I didn't know what it was, but because I didn't have a clue about my hormones. I had no idea about health, hormones, what was happening to me. In fact, I didn't even equate that it was anything to do with my hormones. I was 42. It wasn't like, you know, anywhere near anything that would be hormonal. So anyway, I sat in my car and I looked at this piece of paper and I was so, what am I going to do? I don't understand. And I was really upset. And I thought, I'm going to phone my dad, because my dad actually was a bit of a last resort. But, you know, he was a doctor. And he specialised in hormones. But I didn't know what he did. And I didn't know my thing was about hormones, because the doctor hadn't seen that either. So yeah. I rang him up and I said, Dad, this doctor wants to put me on these antidepressants. And I told him what was wrong. And he said, oh, Nick, it'll be your hormones. And I went, why? What do you mean? He goes, you're in perimenopause. And I said, I'm what? What is that? And that was, this is, you know, bearing in mind, this is 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So the word didn't exist back then. And I'd never heard of it. And all I could hear was menopause. And I thought, well, I know that happens in your 50s. That's not me. I'm not that old. I am now, but I wasn't then. And he said, no, this is what happens. And he told me basically what happens to your hormones as you get older and what perimenopause was. And I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, you need to be looking after your hormones now. And this is how you do it. And it's not the diets you're trying to do. And it's not the crazy, go crazy at the gym and all the things that I thought were right. And it was, you know, eat these types of foods and make sure that you're sleeping and you've got your stress under control and you're doing this and this and this, and these supplements will help as well. Anyway, I didn't really believe much of what he said. So he said, right, okay, we'll get you tested and we'll find out what's going on. So I did these tests. My cortisol was on the floor. My thyroid was borderline low. My estrogen and progesterone, my estrogen was all over the place. My progesterone was on the floor.
Wow.
And she said, now do you believe me? And I said, okay, if it's on paper, I get it. So what do I need to do? She told me what to do. Within about 3 weeks, I felt very, very different. My energy came back, my brain fog lifted. My mood was so much better. My kids noticed it straight away. And I started to shift the belly fat. Obviously it hasn't gone completely, to be fair, but there was progress. Anyway, so I just thought, well, hang on a minute. What's just happening here? First of all, I don't know what's happening in my own body. Second of all, it's actually quite easy to fix, but I've got to change my mindset around this. And start looking after myself. And there's this whole sort of nourishment aspect. You know, I'd never thought about nourishing my body before. It just, you know, your body just works, doesn't it? And then you diet or you don't diet, and then that's how you control it. But there's this whole area of, you know, that as we get older, we get more stressed, or there's more stress, and how we manage that, our resilience goes down. And then these hormonal changes are an internal stress as well. So we've got to take that into account and start actually putting ourselves first for once, and really just making sure that we're looking after ourselves properly. I hadn't got that before, and it was a real kind of light bulb moment for me. Anyway, I was fascinated by the minute he started talking about hormones. I just thought, I need to know more about this. And I just went down a rabbit hole of learning and reading, and until the point where I thought, right, this is it. This is the thing that's the missing piece for me in my life, because I wasn't fulfilled in corporate. And I thought, right, that's it. So it gave me the impetus to give up that role, that type of work, and go back to college and learn. So that's when I went back to college, learned 4 years of nutrition and hormones, and started the business in 2014. So 7 years we've been helping other women going through what I did, or trying not to, avoiding going through what I did, and really, you know, get themselves feeling better than they did when they were younger.
Oh, it's amazing hearing your story. And of course, you know, you're quite well known, so I've heard about you before, you know, getting to meet you. And I find it fascinating to hear people's kind of real life stories, why they're passionate about what they do. And when you talked about that outburst with your daughter, that really resonated, because I think, you know, with a lot of us, it's that sudden, like this monster erupting. You're like, where did that come from? Like, that's not who I am. And then the whole layering of guilt, you know, and the feeling that you're becoming unbalanced, and even you know, losing your mind, becoming a crazy person. I think that's the scary thing. And then, like you said, going to your doctor. I went to see 7 or 8 doctors, and I'm a chirpy, you know, I've always been quite an outgoing person. And I would be crying and saying, there's something wrong with me, but I don't know what's going on. And they'll be like, we'll put you on antidepressants. And I'm like, but I'm not depressed. I can feel I'm not depressed. I can feel it's cyclical. It's not all the time. And I go from one state to the other very quickly. And then I'd be talking about all the other issues I've got going on, which now I'm like, they were all hormonal. And yet there was no link. There's no link until I ended up seeing a specialist. And sadly, I really crashed quite badly a couple of years ago because of all these things, and because I wasn't, you know, my home. And I think what you just said, interestingly, about the mindset change that needs to occur in midlife, and really recognizing that the vehicle, you call it the car, you know, is not something that we can just take for granted like we did in our 20s and 30s, and rev and rev and rev and expect it to keep on going. And really that sort of paradigm shift into, if we want this vehicle to carry on for the next 30, 40, maybe even 50 years, we absolutely have to start totally changing the way we live our lives and look after ourselves.
Because actually that's one of the biggest factors. Actually, I used to think it was diet because, you know, of my nutrition training, but since being, you know, helping women in clinic for the last 7 years, I actually think that stress is the number one indicator of how well you'll go through peri and menopause, hands down, because even if you're on a poor diet, you can get by sometimes, but if you're stressed out, those the hormones, they're just, cortisol is your stress hormone. And if it's raised or if it's too low, it's going to have a big impact on all your other hormones. And your other hormones are already under stress going through menopause. So, you know, the more cortisol there is about, the more that is going to have an impact. So I definitely see that in clinic, that the more stressed the woman is, the worse the symptoms. Definitely, it's a definite correlation there.
Could you just explain to everybody the actual kind of biology there, what's happening with the hormones as our ovaries shut down, what those hormones actually do for our vessel, our body, and then the importance of the adrenals when we're in perimenopause?
As we get towards, like, I'm talking generally now because this is going to be a different for every woman, but around about your mid-30s, your egg reserve is going to go down because we start running out of eggs. So that means that we don't ovulate every single month. So it may be that happens in your later 30s or early 40s, but, you know, from some point in your mid-30s, you're going to be skipping ovulation. What that means is that your progesterone starts to decline because we only produce progesterone when we ovulate. So progesterone starts to go down. And progesterone is your anti-anxiety pro-sleep hormone. So that's when we can start getting increased anxiety, tension, and sleep issues. Okay. Then at the same time, estrogen is declining, but more slowly, and it fluctuates a lot more. So we can get symptoms of high and low estrogen over a number of years before it starts to go down and settle post-menopause. So we can get this kind of roller coaster of estrogen. And the fact that progesterone is it doesn't fluctuate, it just kind of goes down very gradually, depleting, you're going to get the ratio of estrogen and progesterone is going to really vary. So you're going to get symptoms of high estrogen, then symptoms of low estrogen, and lots in between. And you can get them, you know, in the same day. So, yeah. So there's lots of variations going on with estrogen and progesterone. And then, so the adrenals, what can happen with that is that you've got potentially increased stress around this time. Not only is that stress on the body, by the way, that those hormones changing through perimenopause. So that's it, going to increase cortisol. But we've got, you know, midlife, we've got all these extra external stresses going on as well. We might have growing kids or work responsibilities or whatever, you know, all the stuff that happens to us midlife, sandwich generation, elderly parent, all of that. Mm. So we've got increased stress to deal with. We've got internal stresses going on. So the adrenals are constantly pumping. Oh, and by the way, we might have a pandemic thrown in.
That's right.
Fire things up a bit more.
Just line things up a bit more. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So tons of stress internally and externally. And when the body is producing a lot of cortisol to deal with that, so that's our body's response to stress is to switch on our fight or flight. Lots of cortisol, lots of adrenaline, and we rely on that to stay alive. And then when that happens, what happens is the body goes into survival mode. And when the body's in survival mode, it prioritizes you surviving. So it'll just look at, you know, what you need to survive. And that means, you know, a bit of belly fat, because that's extra energy when you need to fight or flight. It's going to, you know, cause shut down the brain a little bit, because it's going to cause a bit of brain fog and memory loss. It's going to shut down your sex hormones, because who needs to the body doesn't want to have a baby when you're in survival mode, right? So the libido goes down, your periods start to get weird, you know, you can get PMS and heavy periods and all of the stuff that goes with our monthly cycle. Cortisol also will shut down your digestion, because you don't need to be digesting lunch when you're in survival mode. So, you know, you get digestive issues flaring up. It weakens your immune system over time as well, because, you don't want to be, you know, your body doesn't want to be interested in fighting a low-grade infection if, you know, you're about to be killed by a lion. So all of that. And it also can suppress your thyroid as well. So it messes with your blood sugar. It messes with everything. So when you've got a lot of stress going on, your body's constantly fighting it, that's when we can get problems, not just with your hormones, but with the whole body, basically, all your health. And of course, it's going to mess with your sleep as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on when stress is around. So that's why adrenal health is so, so important, because without it, you can be on the best diet in the world. You could be exercising and moving all right and, you know, doing all the right things. But if your cortisol is out of balance, then none of that is going to really have a big impact.
Golly, that's a lot. I just, how do you think that we, you know, people like you and I who are just so passionate about getting this key information out to midlife women, how can we get them to understand the importance of that slowing down and that conscious restoration, that conscious, you know, ability to go into the alpha brain waves and let those adrenals just be more settled? Because everyone, I mean, this was me, I was pushing through fatigue because I kind of felt I had to. There was a real sort of pressure. I felt this internal pressure. I know it was me putting the pressure on myself. I did have the digestive issues, but I was sent off to have Crohn's disease, you know, scope, etc. You know, I did have the terrible insomnia. I was just offered sleeping pills. I did have, you know, all the aches and pains in my bones, etc. I did have breast issues. I was sent off to have breast cancer, you know, scan, etc. So all of those things, which absolutely were to do with hormones going all over the place and adrenals being revved too much. I got to the point where I needed to stop completely and sort of rebuild, but we obviously don't want people to get to that stage. It's how to communicate that this stage, it's okay to admit that you need time out. It's okay to do a yoga class that is calming, as opposed to, oh, I've got an hour in the week, I've got to do a spin class, or I've got to do a HIIT class because I've got this belly fat. It's that connection with relaxation is going to be the key thing that helps you lose that belly fat. How do we do that?
I think it's just through ongoing education. It's the only way, is just to keep banging out the message. So for me, it's about, you know, really a lot of repetition and just explaining the link as well between cortisol, stress, and the other hormones and the whole and your whole health. And just emphasizing the fact that we, you know, that post 40, we absolutely need to, like I said, nourish ourselves, put self-care absolutely at the forefront and prioritize it. And I just call it a non-negotiable, because actually, if you don't do it, you end up burnt out. You're just no good to anybody around you. So nobody, no woman wants that. We all want to help others and be of service and be the one that's the hub and the glue that sticks everything together. We can't do that if we don't look after ourselves. We end up being a burden. And that's the last thing everybody wants, isn't it? Women always say, I don't want to be a burden. Then look after yourself, because that stops you being a burden.
So I think
is really key, but I also think for me, it was the testing that really helped me. Seeing something, because you can listen to someone who says, yeah, you're too stressed, you need to slow down. Well, you know, I wasn't really in the place to listen to that. But when I saw my results on paper and, you know, my cortisol was pretty flatlined, and I thought, oh God, actually, this is real. You know, this is actually a real hormone, it's physically happening in my body. I haven't got enough of it, and that's why I'm tired, my brain's foggy, I've got this belly fat that I can't shift, and I'm really horrible to be around. That's why, because my cortisol was on the floor. So for me, it was okay, I need to do something about this. I can't just ignore this. This is like science here. I needed evidence, if you like. So I that as a motivation for me to actually, you know, to make some changes. And what I did from that point was I started to look into meditation. I started yoga at that point. I had never done it before. And I started to, you know, really look at nourishment in a different way and self-care in a different way. And I've been practicing a sort of morning stretch. It's not a full yoga practice, it's about 20 minutes, but it's my little practice that I do. I sit and meditate for 10 to 15 minutes. It doesn't always look very good, and it certainly doesn't feel like I've done anything sometimes, because I sit there and my thoughts are racing for 15 minutes and I go, oh. But by doing it consistently, it has really, really helped me to slow down and appreciate what I've got. And gratitude is another thing as well. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. And, you know, journaling and gratitude, I mean, it sounds a bit like woo-woo if you've never done that before, but Honestly, it really makes such a difference. So that made a difference to me. And I would, if you'd have told me pre-40 that I'd be, you know, doing yoga and meditation every morning and practicing gratitude, I'd have said, you know, you're crazy. That's not, I would never do that.
That is so true. That's just so true of so many of us. You know, I worked in television before I became a yoga teacher, and I laugh because I was doing, I practiced yoga for about 10 years before I retrained, but I was doing Ashtanga yoga. So I was basically doing gymnastics on speed, and I wasn't breathing the whole time. Not at all. And people like me who are quite A-type and quite busy really need to balance ourselves and do like the opposite of what we normally would do. And it's a big life lesson, isn't it? To accept that, to really truly appreciate on a cellular level, not just an intellectual level, that when we focus on, you know, what we're grateful for, what we do have, we energetically kind of bring in more of that, because, you know, the whole where your focus goes, your energy goes, the energy flows, if you like. I do guided meditations every morning as well. So I've got into alpha brainwave changing guided meditations, and I find that for me really works. What I did find when I did have the breakdown, because obviously I was pushing through, was that I didn't have the tools myself to help myself at that stage. That's when I really needed to lean in to other women, who'd been through what I was going through, and let other people help me. Which is why I've created the womenswellbeing.me site, is because I want this to be a place that people can come and find out this kind of information and do the practices and not feel alone, because it's very isolating, isn't it, when you're feeling not well. It's very isolating. So now for me at that point, I eventually saw a hormone specialist doctor, and after lots of, I was really anti HRT because I didn't understand it, the modern HRT, to be honest. Very much like, I'm a yoga teacher, I'm going to do these naturally, give me a green smoothie, yes, even tell me to meditate, yes, but don't try and push some pharmaceuticals on me. That was absolutely my stance then. However, for me, and in the state that I was in, along with doing shamanic journeying and lots of restorative yoga, guided meditation, energy healing, seeing a counselor, all of this, you know, and leaning into a network of women was key. Then actually I found that the getting on some progesterone so I could sleep, and then eventually adding in some body identical estrogen has been a big component of my healing journey. So I just wanted you to, you know, being somebody who is so knowledgeable on hormones, could you just speak about your opinion or what, you know, what your take is on that as a component?
Yeah, like you, I wanted to do everything naturally. And, you know, I got to the stage where it was all going really, really well. And I was one of those people that say, yeah, I'm sailing through this, it's fine. What are you moaning about? You know, but doing all, you know, all the things that we teach about, you know, your basics, your nutrition, your lifestyle, your supplements, doing all of that, and this new self-care bit that I hadn't done before. So that was all working really, really well until around the age of 50, when I just started suddenly out of the blue having major night sweats. Like I would just be waking up 5 or 6 times a night, just drenched. And I just thought, what's happening? Oh my God, this is actually happening. And then of course I spoke to my dad, and I knew about bioidentical hormones back then, because you could get those privately and a lot of celebrities were on them. And I knew they were sort of naturally molecularly identical, but I didn't know they weren't available on the NHS. Well, I didn't know they were.
Okay.
So it was always like, oh, do I want to go down that route? And, you know, oh, not really, but, you know, I'll see what. And I did for a little while dabble with that, but I wasn't really sure what I was doing. And so I sort of came off them for a bit. Anyway, the sweats came back. I thought, oh, no, I've got to do something. So I got out, tested again and looked at my hormone levels, and my estrogen was really low, my progesterone was low. My mother's got osteoporosis, so she was on HRT for a long time after her hysterectomy in her 30s, and then they took her off the HRT after the scare, the studies that came out, and she was on the old type as well, so she came off it, and of course, you know, her bones started to weaken and she fractured her hip. Just literally falling out of a car. I mean, from, you know, that from there to there, her hip literally shattered into a million pieces.
Oh, my God.
And they found out she had osteoporosis. So I'm very, you know, was very aware of that. And I've been obviously looking after my bones, doing weight bearing exercise. But when I saw my estrogen levels were so low, I thought, hang on a minute, if I can't, if I don't replace this estrogen, I'm going to go her way and get osteoporosis. The other risks of low estrogen are heart disease and dementia, right? The three biggest action, biggest killers are for women.
And the scariest things, dementia.
Heart disease is the biggest killer for women. So, you know, estrogen plays a major role in those three areas. So you're at massive risk of those if you don't have enough estrogen. Now, as you go through menopause, post-menopause, some women's bodies do produce enough estrogen to stop that risk. And, you know, they may have, fat cells that produce estrogen, adrenals can produce a bit of estrogen after the ovaries go. So, you know, some women are able to compensate and get that protection. But for most of us, it's not going to be enough. Even if you don't have symptoms. So, you know, it's definitely worth checking where your estrogen's at if you're post-menopause, because then you can then say, okay, well, I've, you know, my body's actually producing it, or it's not producing it, in which case you do need to replace it. So body identical hormones, or HRT for me, are a very important natural tool that many women can use to replace their estrogen. And I say body identical because it's really, really important you get the right format of
stuff. Yeah, could you just tell the listeners about, you know, what is bioidentical and what is body identical, and if they are wanting to at least explore that as an option, because of course it is so very individual, but if they are wanting to, what they need to do, be talking to their doctors about.
So there's three types of estrogen, of HRT, that you need to know about. The old type, which is the synthetic type, which is oral estrogen, so it's a tablet, or if it's synthetic progestogen, which is the which is in the combined patch. It's also, it's in the contraceptive pill, there's a little bit in the Rhino coil as well. These are synthetic hormones. Because they go through the liver, they do carry a risk of clotting, blood clots, and there is a very small risk of breast cancer. I mean, even with the old type, the risks are quite small, much lower than you would, than, you know, if you drink a lot of alcohol or you're overweight.
I think that's really important to recognize, that actually we're not talking about much risk increases at all. That was interesting to me when I found that out.
But with the new modern type of HRT, you don't have any of those risks, so the doctors have access to both on the NHS. They've got the old type and they've got the new type, which is the body identical type. Because it's molecularly identical to your own hormones, there is no risk of clotting or breast cancer. It's exactly the same, and it's delivered transdermally through the skin or in a spray. The progesterone is actually a pill, but that's fine because it's natural progesterone. There's no risk at all. So for me, there's no point. There's no real value in going with the old type if you've got the body identical type available to you on the NHS, which it is. Okay. So it's the gel, Estrogel, which is the one I take. Estrogen only patch. I think it's called the Estradot or something like that. And then there's a new spray as well that you can just spray on you. That's the estrogen. That's the body identical estrogen. And then the progesterone, there's only one type available on the NHS. It's called Utrogestan, and it's a pill. So it starts with a U, utro as in uterus, gestan with a G. And it's a pill that you take, and I take it at night to help me sleep. And those are freely available on the NHS. Your doctors, the problem is that doctors don't, not a lot of doctors are trained in HRT, so they don't necessarily know the difference between the two types.
This is what I found, that there is a real lack of knowledge about the different types.
Go to your doctor and actually ask for what you want, and don't get fobbed off with something else. You say, I want the body identical. This is the brand. This is the name of it. Just give it to me. basically.
Just give it to me.
And then the other type, what was I talking about? All right, so we've got also got vaginal estrogen. Now, for if you have, you know, if you don't want to take HRT because there's maybe breast cancer in the family or you're worried about it being in your system, but you've got vaginal dryness or painful sex or urinary incontinence, the leaking, because you haven't done enough of Linda's stuff, whatever, you there are vaginal estrogens that are very, very low dose. They're only act in the vaginal area, so they're not going to affect your systemic estrogen levels. So they're very safe, and that's Vagifem, is a pessary. You've got estriol cream. There's several types.
Avastin cream. Yeah, so I did a live about this last week, actually, on bladder issues, and similarly just trying to delineate between HRT, which is systemic, which is going to help your brain and your bones and your heart and your pelvic floor, because it re-elasticizes the estrogen-rich muscle fibers in the pelvic floor. But some people, like probably me before I learned all this stuff, was like, no, there's no way I'm going to go on any kind of HRT. Or, like you say, if there is a BRCA2 positive gene and there is a real concern about you know, any kind of link with breast cancer, might choose not to do this. But then knowing that the Ovestin cream is the cream which is sort of very low dose, the estriol cream. And the beauty about this stuff is that it can go in the vagina to support the vaginal walls. It can go around the sphincters to help plump up the urethra and the anus. It can go on any scar tissue from a perineal episiotomy or tears there. And often women find in mid-40s that pelvic floor trauma from birthing, you know, the muscles and the actual skin becomes a lot weaker and drier, like you say. So even if internally you're still not dry, externally that dryness can end up being itchiness and like insane itchiness or just thinning, and therefore scar tissue starting to almost come apart. Yeah. And this cream, just you can use it externally and internally, and it plumps everything up, re-elasticizes, and also helps with recurring UTIs, with thrush, because it rebalances the pH. It helps to stabilize the detrusor muscles of the bladder. It starts to, you know, sort of elasticize the actual urethra, so it doesn't become all dry and brittle. And because it's not, you know, literally just affects the pelvic floor, I wish more doctors knew about this and could, because I cannot tell you how many students and friends I've got who have just been told to use steroid creams, or they've got all sorts of horrible, distressing pelvic floor disorders, when actually they need a bit of topical estrogen.
It's wonderful stuff, seriously. And you know, yeah, it's just it makes me really angry that doctors aren't trained in this, because, you know, we are half the population. Every single woman will go through this, and the amount of people that struggle in that area is just mind-blowing. So and they're not talking about it either, because it's kind of embarrassing and it's a bit of a taboo, and you know, and when the doctors don't know much about it, so it's really hard to talk to them as well. So
This is the thing. No, I ended up a bit of a mission, you know, when I got sick, going to see some different doctors and kind of doing like a little bit of undercover sleuthing. And I remember one nurse practitioner who I was told to go to for urge issues, and she was saying, so what you need to do is you squeeze and lift and squeeze and lift. And I was like, but what if you've got tension patterns from scar tissue and actually you don't want to be squeezed? And she had no idea what I was talking about. Zero idea. And I thought, wow, okay, this is somebody who's first line that most people will go and see. And there's a real lack of knowledge. Gathering those people who do have knowledge. And then I think it's got to be a grassroots thing, doesn't it? When women of our age do become aware more, then telling friends, telling, you know, just kind of spreading this knowledge. And like you say, a lot of this stuff is available on the NHS. It's not, it you is. Don't necessarily need to go and see a specialist doctor. Yeah.
Inform yourself, get as much information as you can, and go to the doctor fully informed, fully empowered. This is our bodies. We pay for the NHS. You know, they are, it's there to serve us and make us feel better. So, you know, we want to find out what we need and go. And if they're not trained or they don't know what we're talking about, we just have to be really forceful and say, this is what I want. Or why would you not give me this, you know, to try? And even if it's just a trial, just say, look, try this. I've tried everything else. Let me try it and see what happens.
That's so absolutely right.
You know, my doctor was actually didn't have a clue what I said. I want estrogel. I want eutrogestan. She goes, well, why have you, you know, why are you so interested in these? I said, well, because they're body identical. And these are the ones I've heard about that are, you know, really, I want to try them. And she goes, she actually said, well, I'm really, really glad you've done your research because I wouldn't know which one to give you.
I had a conversation with a GP recently, a local GP, who was asking me to explain the difference between body identical and the older synthetic style and what she could prescribe. And she was really interested too, just saying, I'd love, you know, brilliant. No one's ever told me this before. Yeah. So
they don't. So yeah, we have to be, this is it. You know, we have to, this is our bodies and we've got to, you know, stop thinking about the doctors as knowing, as encyclopedias and they know everything because they can't know everything. And especially when they don't get trained on it particularly. So we've got to know about what's going on for ourselves to educate ourselves. It's not hard. You know, you only need to know the basics really.
And then you read your book.
Read the book, yeah. Informed about what is available to you and what you can try to help you. I mean, it won't help everybody because actually, you know, HRT is only estrogen and progesterone. We have over 100 hormones going around our body at any one time, and they've all got a job to do. So any one of those hormones can be out of balance, right? So if you're just replacing estrogen and progesterone and you've got a thyroid issue or your cortisol's out or your blood sugar's all over the place, or you know, your what else could we look at, your testosterone's low, it's not going to actually help those hormones. It'll help the estrogen progesterone, but it won't help the other stuff. So you know, you've got to work out for you what you need. And obviously, you know, the more help you can get that with that, the better. You know, that's why we are here to help women do that, work out what exactly they do need, because every woman is so different and unique. So it's about finding out what your body needs rather than somebody down the road. And that's why, you know, when you go into, we get a lot of, well, which supplements should I take? Well, you know, I don't know what your body needs. So it's really hard to give you an idea. And we have our top five favorite supplements for anyone over 40, because you know, your body needs basic nutrients. But, you know, when it comes to the you know, the other stuff, the additional stuff that's really going to move the needle for you, I don't know until I find out what you've been going through, what your symptoms are, what your history is, what medications you're on, and, you know, and get you tested and find out what your body needs. So that's why we do that. That's why we specialize in that.
So brilliant. It's so incredibly important, the work that you're doing. It really is. And I just wish everybody could come and see you. But on that you mentioned there are, you know, five things that you think everybody should at least be aware of, should be potentially taking. What are those?
Oh, supplement-wise?
Supplement-wise, yeah.
So my top five are a really good multi, and I don't mean things like Menopace or stuff
that's... Not Menopace? Oh, that's what I'm taking. What, no? Okay. It's just my ears are alert.
These are heavily marketed supplements that are full of fillers and additives. You go and have a look at your ingredients and see what's
okay.
In
okay. I guess it's what's promoted at Boots, isn't it? So
they're cheap, and that's, you know, they're marketed as cheap supplements, but they, you know, cheap doesn't mean good, I'm afraid. They're not going to have the right bioavailable nutrients in them. So the B vitamins, they won't be the best form because they're going for the cheap ones. So you want to get the ones that your body will be able to utilize. So things like Nutri Advanced is the one we promote. Nutri Advanced Multi for Women.
Nutri Advanced Multi for Women. Okay.
One of mine. I can send you the blog on this with all the brands, or the shop link, whatever.
That would be good. Yeah, I'm sure.
There's a shop. It's not my shop. These aren't my supplements. These are the ones we use in clinic to recommend to women. It's sort of very general, so they like your basics, and then your body, then we work out what your body might need on top of that. All right,
okay.
So the next one would be your vitamin D, absolutely crucial. Not just okay. Actually, it's also you need to be taking it through the summer if you're not sunbathing or you're not exposing your skin, or you know, you burn in the skin in the sun, or you're wearing sun cream, because no vitamin D can penetrate your skin when you're wearing sun cream or you're in the shade, whatever. So you need it all year round unless you're getting exposure onto your skin.
And do you recommend any certain brands there, or can you get most vitamin D's?
So most vitamin D is fine as long as D3 and not D2. You don't want D2, but D3 is the majority of supplements out there. But we like to incorporate vitamin K2 with it. So we like the formulas with D and K because that is the perfect combination for your bones.
Okay.
And it's really hard to get K2 from your food. You need to be eating this Japanese natto stuff that nobody likes, so we don't. It's really hard to get hold of, and we really need it. It's good for your heart as well. So we like a really good supplement called Cytoplan with vitamin D and K in it. But I can send you the link to that.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. Vitamin D and K. Awesome.
And then the next one is magnesium, absolutely critical for everybody at the moment going through any kind of stress. But it's also critical for muscles. It's your relaxer. It helps you sleep. It helps produce energy. It does over 300 things in the body. So it's really hard to get in the diet enough of it because it gets very depleted by stress very quickly. And so you need to be eating a lot of dark green leafy veg and nuts and seeds to get enough magnesium to be completely, you know, filling it up all the time. And most of us don't eat too much of our dark green leafy veg. So yeah, we absolutely need magnesium. I'd say at least 300 or 400 milligrams of magnesium. And there's lots of different types, but we really should be going for like the glycinate or the citrate.
The glycinate, I'm going to have a look because I've got a big bottle beside my bed and I have two every night. And it does make a difference when I don't remember to take the magnesium. But I'm going to go and have a look.
When I don't take my magnesium, my legs go twitchy.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Same.
It's really good for restless legs if you ever get that, or you just can't like switch off. So that's the third one. Fourth one is vitamin C. Because not only does it support your immune system, but it's your major antioxidant. So it keeps your joints and your skin and your eyes young, stops you aging quite so fast. So that's a good one.
And anything in particular, or can you just get vitamin C from foods? Yeah. Okay, great.
And you want 1,000 milligrams a day.
Okay, minimum. I need to go back down to
more than that, but
shops.
Yeah, minimum 1,000. And then the last one would be like a really good quality fish oil with DHA and EPA. DHA and EPA are your omega-3 fats, and your brain literally sucks those up. Your brain is mostly made of DHA fats. So that is really supporting your cognitive health, your mental health. But also omega-3s are for skin, your lubrication, for your joints, for your cells, your hormones, everything, omega-3. So generally we're not eating enough oily fish, salmon, stuff like that. You can get, you know, obviously that's where you get your food sources of it. But if you're a vegetarian or you don't eat a lot of those kinds of types of foods, then you really do need to supplement.
So that's interesting. Can you tell me a little bit? Because I know that, it's cholesterol that is the sort of the basis for our production of hormones. Which I was, you know, considering all through the 90s, we were told cut out all cholesterol and people were trying to have just, you know, white omelet, the whites of the eggs for omelets and so on and so forth. And now, you know, it's all back to good fats, get your olive oil in there and eat your full fat yogurt and so on and so forth. So what, tell us a bit about that, that fat essential equation from a nutritionist point of view.
Yeah, that's another massive mindset shift, isn't it? For us women of a certain age who've grown up with a low fat message drummed into us since our teens. And all that's done is actually promote massive problems with blood sugar and insulin and gaining weight. Because what do they do when they take the fat out of a product? What do they put back in it? They either put sugar in it or flavorings or additives or chemicals, because otherwise it doesn't taste very nice without fat. Fat makes everything taste lovely. So not only that, fat helps you absorb the vitamins in the food. So your fat soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K, come from a fatty food, and without the fat in there you can't absorb it. So if you take the fat out of milk, for instance, if you're drinking skimmed milk, You're not going to get any of those vitamins. It's just literally water.
That's quite a big mind-blowing, like you said, a big paradigm shift for most of us, most women. So, and I think, you know, really, this is a really important thing to hammer home, how much we do need to bring fat into our diet. So what are your kind of top tips on what we could be eating more of, what we should be consciously eating more of?
Yeah, get away from the skinny lattes, people. Honestly, the amount of times I'm in a coffee shop, or used to be when we were allowed in, listening to women ordering skinny lattes, it's pointless. It's just there's no nutrients in that whatsoever. And actually, what the body does when it doesn't recognize a food, because it doesn't recognize a food that where the fat's been taken out in a processed environment, doesn't recognize that. That's like artificial food to the body. And that's going to actually raise cortisol. It could be inflammatory. The body has to work harder to digest it. So the body works best on real whole foods that haven't been tampered with. So that's why we say don't go with, you know, avoid processed foods, avoid spreads that have been manufactured in a factory, you know, go with butter. Butter's been churned lovingly from full fat milk, and it's got loads of bioavailable vitamin A in it. It's incredibly good for you. Yet we've been told to eat this crappy processed fake spread.
Yeah.
Vegetable oils in it, which we know are turn into trans fats in our body.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, get back to real foods that nature provided, that the body knows what to deal with. So good fats, I mean, you know, animal fats are probably the best stable fats to cook with. Lard, you know, your grandma used to cook the potatoes in duck fat and goose fat and lard. That is because that was available back then, but it tastes amazing and it's really good for the body. The body knows what to do with saturated fat. It's a good thing. The body does not know what to do with vegetable oils that go rancid and they break down and they denature and they turn into trans fats. And the body goes, whoa, what is this stuff? I'm going to create a whole inflammatory cascade here because these vegetable oils are, I don't know what they are. And so I'm going to just create this immune response.
Golly, that's just huge, isn't it? You know, and I was thinking about the rates of dementia and Alzheimer's now. And I wonder, because our brain is literally fat, isn't it? That's what it is fueled by. So if you think about the diets of the last couple of decades,
yeah,
of stripping out all of that essential fat.
Alzheimer's is essentially type 3 diabetes. That's what they're calling it.
Okay, interesting.
Because of it's the sugar and the carbs that we have been constantly eating that have caused the inflammation in the brain and the pathways to go down this Alzheimer route. They've done some studies on it. So it's a form of metabolic syndrome, which is insulin resistance and heart disease and diabetes that are a mix. And it's the modern day combination of the really bad advice we've been given in avoiding fat and eating too many carbs.
You know, it just feels like women have been given such a raw deal when it comes to research and understanding our physiology and our psychology. And, you know, I know that things are changing very rapidly now. I heard that that for the first time, there is a long queue for doctors to actually do perimenopausal training. So all of a sudden there's actually queues, there's waiting lists for doctors to get this education, whereas before they couldn't get people on these courses. No, none of the doctors were interested. So the tides are changing, and obviously we're here at the right time. But my God, when I listen to that kind of thing and I think about all the women who have been affected,
yeah,
because of a lack of understanding of how we work, the fact that people have thought that we're just little men and we can be given smaller doses of what the men are given. And
or they just whip out your bits. The hysterectomy levels, I mean, so high. It's like, well, we don't know what to do with you, so we'll just take everything out.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've got there's another podcast right there. But you know, it's hard.
Criminal.
It's, it's hard to find, you know, I've got people in our community who are, you know, going for hysterectomies, but are not then prepared to do the work prior to it, or not prepared to learn about what might happen with their, even if they're keeping their ovaries, they're not having a oophorectomy, the potential consequences once that blood supply is taken away. I do think that we are in the soup of, if a person in a white coat tells us this is what we should do, then all other, you know, independent inquiry and thinking gets switched off.
Yeah, I do. But, I completely understand when a woman wants to go for a hysterectomy if they've been suffering for so long and not getting any help. That, you know, if it's the answer, if, you know, it will stop, you know, the heavy periods or the whatever problems they're having, it will stop. But you're going to replace that with a set of whole new things like menopause and scar tissue and all those other things that come with a major operation like that. So there is a consequence. But what I think, what a lot of doctors don't actually spend much time on, is that post, what life will be like post hysterectomy, because actually a lot of women just want that quick fix. They want, right, you know, I've had enough, I've done this for 10-20 years, take my pain away. Yes. And because they haven't been properly supported with what's actually the root cause of that pain in the first place, they're then led down the path of surgery, and then everything's taken out. They're not prepared for the post life of not having your reproductive organs in you.
Yeah, like I said, the nutrients, the possible HRT.
And also, but it's not their fault, is what I'm saying. It's not their fault, because that's the only options that they've ever had. Because if they'd actually got properly supported when they were having the problems before the operation, then, you know, they wouldn't need the operation, and then they wouldn't have the aftermath problems. So it goes back a long way.
It's almost back at school, isn't it? Learning, women learning, girls learning much more about their anatomy.
Is what it is. Long lack of systemic support in our system.
Yeah.
It's very, very sad that a lot of women have had to suffer so much. But I hope this is changing. I want to end this on a positive note.
I was just going to say I feel a bit depressed now, but
I do think that, you know, things are changing. And, for us, there's so much more education. There are so many more practitioners. There are so much more help out there now. And just really, really go and look for it, because, there's so much you can do for yourself before you ever have to get on an operating table, I promise you. And yes, sometimes that is the only option. I'm not saying it's not ever, you know, warranted, but, you know, get all those other alternative options in first and make sure you've tried everything else first, I think.
I would concur with the, getting yourself armed with the, whether it's the pelvic floor exercises or the pelvic floor down training, potentially knowing about the HRT, definitely getting your nutrition sorted beforehand, getting those adrenals calmed down and your sleep sorted beforehand. There's no point us pretending we're in our 20s and 30s, carrying on a lifestyle which is really detrimental to the vessel, thinking that a surgery will fix everything, and then still carrying on with the same lifestyle afterwards and not expecting that surgery to need to be repeated or things to go wrong, because we wouldn't treat our cars in that way at all, would we? So treating our bodies as, I say in class a lot, you know, this is the vessel that we've been gifted for this lifetime. And, you know, from a yogic point of view, we are living this experience, this life through this vessel. And it's worth looking after, you know, it's worth looking after and spending time and money and energy on making sure the vessel can go for the long haul. So. Yeah.
And that's the other thing is I find a lot of women feel shame or guilt around investing in themselves. Mm. But, you know, how much time and money do we spend on everybody else around us? It's just crazy that we don't think we are worthy of spending money on.
And I was just thinking, I went and I popped down to the shops for the first time yesterday in ages. Well, obviously we haven't been able to go to the shops, but I needed some face cream and eye cream and stuff. And I ended up spending £45 on a, and I could spend a lot more, on a set of eye cream and face thing, you know. And I thought, wow, okay, so that's one little thing. To be honest, I probably won't even end up using it very much because I'm not, you know. But we will do that. We'll buy a nice shirt, or we'll buy a face mask that's, you know, or we'll spend lots of money on our highlights or whatever, but we won't go to yoga classes, or we won't go and find out what's happening with our hormones, or we won't, you know, gift ourselves a nap in the afternoon if we're absolutely knackered. What's wrong with that? We're crazy, aren't we? We're crazy.
I think we just some of us think we don't deserve it somehow. There's a lot of self-worth, maybe things going on there that, you know, we need to be looking after everyone else, and we're way down the list, and we don't deserve, you know, the time or attention or money. And I think that is just completely wrong. We need to flip that on its head and put ourselves first in every way. But because that's the only way forward.
So our health is our wealth, isn't it? Really. And I think that saying is just so true. Our health is our wealth. Nothing else actually matters. Our families can't thrive if we are broken. We can't show up. And the world, keep saying, the world needs women. And the world needs women who are functioning well to save it, because it's our connectivity. It's our ability to empathize. It's our ability to think about lots of different things at the same time. It's our very holistic approach to life, which is needed to save our whole planet. But if us, the women who are, you know, are in this stage of life where we can actually do something, and have got that wisdom, have got the experience in order to really make a difference, if we are not first ultimately looking after ourselves, then we're kind of depriving the world of our knowledge, our wisdom, our gifts.
It's selfish.
Yes. Oh, listen, thank you so much. I think we'll end it on that rally cry to woman. Don't be selfish by not looking after yourself. Look after yourself.
That is self-care is selfless.
I love that. Self-care is selfless. Brilliant. Oh, so Nikki, have you got any last tips that you wish all women could hear from you?
Oh gosh. Get the book. It's got everything in there that you need. Tips. Eat well, but not, you don't have to eat well all the time, but just make sure you're nourishing yourself with some really good nutrients. Your hormones need so many different nutrients, you can't believe. So just make sure you've got a varied, lovely diet full of loads of veg. Fill your plate with half of vegetables, and then the other half with protein and healthy fats, and you'll be good to go. Second, make sure you're prioritizing your self-care. Third, just watch your environmental chemicals, because they can mess with your hormones as well. More information on that in the book. And fourthly, don't massively push yourself with exercise. Over 40, your body needs much more nourishing type of movement. So moving more generally in your day, and lovely restorative exercises like yoga and walking in nature are going to be much more nourishing for you. Go on your runs if you want to, but don't do it if you're depleted or you're tired and it makes you feel worse, because that's your body telling you that you haven't got the energy for that. So don't push yourself if it makes you feel worse. Only do the exercise that makes you feel great again afterwards. And really, really think about, you know, movement rather than intense push.
I'm sure. Oh, I love that. Motion is lotion. Oh, listen, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Nikki. And so Nikki Williams, it's not you, it's your hormones. I'm going to put a link to the book and also those little bits of information about the supplements that you recommend. But yeah, really fantastic to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Really, really been a pleasure.
Okay, take care. Bye. Bye, Nikki.